Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, the first day of spring. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. Controversial carbon capture pipeline issue did not vanish from northeast Iowa after Navigator CO2 bowed out and abandoned its proposed project in October. The Free Soil Foundation, a newly formed grassroots organization backed by the likes of former Republican U.S. Representative Steve King, reminded people Friday of the issue's reemergence in the wake of Summit Carbon Solutions' latest application at the desk of the three-member Iowa Utilities Board. The foundation hosted a Stop Summit CO2 Pipeline event at the Waverly Area Veterans Post. Organizers informed people about the company's latest partnership with Poet and Valero ethanol plants when King called the proposal a giant boondoggle. It takes on a route similar to the one previously proposed by Navigator for its carbon dioxide pipeline, touching Bremer, Hardin, Butler, Fayette, and Floyd counties. The recent developments were no surprise to Kim Junker, a Butler County farmer who has fought against projects she says would impede on Iowa's property rights if eminent domain were invoked. It's going to be really difficult for the Iowa Utilities Board to grant this company a permit if they have very few easements signed, said Junker to a crowd of about 100 people. It's just like the Rock Island Clean Line. It's just like the wind farm. Very few easements, and these companies are going to go away. We need to stick together, all us landowners. There's a lot still to happen as it relates to Summit's permit application. To start with, the Bremer County Board of Supervisors is expecting to hear from Summit representatives about its plans at its 9 a.m. April 9th meeting. The Sierra Club's Iowa chapter has scheduled a rally for 11:30 a.m. March 26th at the State Capitol Building in Des Moines in an attempt to strengthen proposed legislation and push back against the projects altogether. The Free Soil Foundation has hired lobbyist Victoria Sinclair, according to founding member Doyle Turner, and King emphasized afterwards the plan is to eventually litigate against the projects. Public officials, landowners, and representatives of conservation groups spent most of the 2.5 hours Friday sharing what they say are important facts about the project spurred by federal tax credits in the name of environmentalism. Said Junker, landowners discovered the volume of water that this pipeline, Summit, would take. We're talking about 1 billion gallons of water a year. And you folks, we're in a drought. Can you imagine what our aquifer is going to look like if this happened, if this goes through? Among those who spoke was State Senator Sandy Salmon, who received the first of 2 standing ovations. She gave a scripture lesson backing her belief the project is morally wrong. Another concern is the company's contention that the pressurized liquefied CO2 is as safe as a can of pop, said Jess Mazur, conservation coordinator at Iowa chapter of the Sierra Club. People are worried that the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration has not established guidelines for such projects and that an adequate plume study has not been developed to help first responders react if there were to be a rupture, said Corey Serwinski, chair of the Bremer County Board of Supervisors and an entrepreneur. I'm not anti-business by any means. I'm not anti-pipeline. But the safety of this literally keeps me up at night. I just don't know consciously how any company could think to do this and believe that the potential isn't there to have a rupture and cause significant damage and loss of life. He says it's personal for him, because the proposed corridor is 400 to 600 feet out my front door. In his mind, Navigator's proposal in 2022 left people scrambling, but 2 years has given them time to organize. Zerwinski said about his recent conversations with two colleagues, "We've been talking some strategy. We're in a different place than we were 2 years ago. The board passed a zoning ordinance with setbacks and other parameters for projects last year. That measure had been challenged in court by Navigator. He thinks the summit proposal is in violation of what was adopted and noted the board is thinking about objecting to the IUB. We feel like we have some ground to hold up initial public meetings, which will also hold up the discussions with landowners for easements," he said. Zerwinski in Missouri noted the IUB ruled Thursday that the public information meetings, which would mark the start of Summit being allowed to approach property owners about voluntary easement agreements, will be pushed back from last month until at least June. The Sierra Club is pushing for the company's many permit applications to be considered altogether since the original ones, which had been further along than the Navigators, are still pending. Anything else is a blatant attempt to undermine the opposition to the current pipelines because you can't expand something that doesn't exist, said Mazur. They don't have approval for their first docket, so what are they expanding? She said. All of these dockets need to be consolidated into one so that we can start over and every landowner around the route has a fair shot. An email was sent to a Summit spokesperson late Friday night for comment, but not returned. Authorities have identified the body found near the Cedar River in LaPorte City. The remains were identified as those of 23-year-old Daniel Van Brocklin of Raymond, according to the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office. The cause of death hasn't been determined and could be released in 6 to 8 weeks, according to the Sheriff's Office. Van Brocklin's body was found March 9th on a sandbar in the Cedar River between Gilbertville and LaPorte City. Deputies said the initial indication was he tripped and fell into a bonfire while camping during a solo canoe voyage. The former manager of an ATM business stole more than $3.4 million from the business over a period of years, according to figures released during sentencing last week. James Eugene Dwyer, formerly of Gilbertville, was sentenced to 5 years in prison on Friday on charges of wire fraud and filing a false tax return. Following prison, he will be on supervised release for 3 years. Dwyer was initially charged with taking $1.9 million from Mobile Money, where he worked as the California-based company's manager of Midwest operations out of its Waterloo office. But court records indicate company officials estimated the office lost $3.4 million over the years Dwyer worked for the company. Mobile Money delivers and retrieves cash from ATM machines. In January 2021, Dwyer allegedly tried to cover up a shortage of money in Mobile Money's Waterloo vault by tampering with the lock and telling his bosses it wasn't working. He told them he needed a cash infusion from a Des Moines bank so Mobile Money could cover its ATM routes. The vault was supposed to contain $1.1 million, but when it was finally opened in February 2021, there was less than $100,000 inside, according to court records. On February 1st, 2021, Dwyer sent 10 bank deposit tickets to Mobile Money, purporting to show he had deposited $2.5 million in cash. But the bank deposits were fraudulent, authorities said. That same month, Dwyer admitted to company officials he took money from the business, according to court records. A review by the company found other inconsistencies, including that there was less money in ATMs than there should be. Deposits Dwyer was supposed to make to a bank account never occurred. Cash from ATMs that were uninstalled from Casey's convenience stores never reached the bank. And routes that were supposed to be run that never were, according to court records. Prosecutors said Dwyer never reported the stolen funds on his income tax filings over a period of years. As part of his sentence, Dwyer was ordered to pay $3,407,000 in restitution to Mobile Money Incorporated and the company's insurance carrier. The case was prosecuted by Assistant U.S. Attorney Anthony Morfitt and investigated by the FBI and the IRS. State conservation officials found no living fish last week in the East Nishnabotna River south of Red Oak, the result of a massive fertilizer spill at a farmer's cooperative. The only living fish were discovered near Hamburg in far southwest Iowa, downstream of where the river joins with the West Nishnabotna, said John Lorenzen, a fisheries biologist for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. However, the handful of surviving carp he saw appeared to be dying. Lorenzen said, "I've never dealt with a situation like this before." He evaluated sections of about 50 river miles over the course of 4 days to determine the scope of the fish kill. He had not yet fully tallied the estimated number of dead fish on Friday, but noted there were also numerous dead frogs, snakes, mussels, and earthworms. The spill is the result of someone at New Cooperative leaving open a hose valve that leaked about 265,000 gallons of liquid nitrogen fertilizer, said Wendy Whitrock, a senior environmental specialist for the DNR. The leak is believed to have started Saturday and was discovered and stopped by a co-op employee Monday morning, she said. The company might be subject to large fines and restitution fees for the dead fish. The effects of the river contamination continued into Missouri, where the Nishnabotna flows about another 10 miles until it reaches the Missouri River. Lorenzen said conservation officials in that state discovered dead fish near the mouth of the river. In smaller concentrations, the fertilizer contamination can result in a lack of oxygen that kills fish, Lorenzen said. Lab tests to determine the severity of the contamination were still pending on Friday. The lasting impact on the fish populations is not yet clear. Lorenzen said many of the game fish, such as catfish and walleye, are likely still in the Missouri River, where they stay during colder months until returning to the Nishnabotna rivers in the spring. Large numbers of small fish, which the bigger fish feed upon, have died, but those populations can be restored by fish that survived upstream from the spill or in the numerous tributaries that were not affected by it. It's possible that the fertilizer killed turtles, too, that buried themselves in sediment of the river bottom for winter. Lorenzen plans to return to the area in late spring to see whether turtle carcasses have floated to the river surface. The DNR recommends that residents with water wells near the river have their drinking water tested for nitrate, a service that is free through county environmental health departments. Gretchen Quinzen knows from a career in theater the value of being able to pivot and adapt. The lights might break down, but the stage manager must ensure the show goes on when an audience packs the seats. Now, a preschool educator, Quinzen said the field has some similarities to working in theater, where she spent time as deck crew member, costume assistant, and stage manager. She's had preschool children bring in an object from home, for example. Her response is to integrate that into the lesson. While serving as the director and lead teacher of Casa Montessori in 2022, that adaptability was tested even further. The preschool, founded in the 1980s, had to move from the rented building it had been in at the corner of 9th and Clay Streets. The building, a former Mennonite church, was demolished as plans for new housing moved forward. Casa Montessori eventually was renamed Montessori at the Y, as its nonprofit board agreed to have the preschool absorbed by the Black Hawk County YMCA, 669 South Hackett Road of Waterloo, along with its leftover funding and materials. Coinsen decided to strike off on her own and, after plenty of twists and turns, has the building space to support a long-term plan. The 2,000-square-foot space at 6203 Chancellor Drive was formerly home to Grimstad and is owned by neighboring Rapids Reproductions. It is now undergoing upgrades to open as a new business, Prairie Rose Montessori School. The first day of classes will be April 1st. Coinsen said about being on the precipice of her new preschool center, "It's been exciting and scary. It's been 2 years since CASA closed, and it's the love and support of the families and children from CASA that's led me to want to open." Coinsen had been CASA's director for a year and a half, but was involved as an assistant for some 15 years since her own kids went through the preschool. Coinsen is expecting to enroll 30 kids ages 2 through 6 years old in the program. It will be the third Montessori-driven morning and afternoon preschool and early evening child care in Waterloo and Cedar Falls. "The enrollment is dictated by the two bathrooms," she emphasized. "It's just one example of what's required to run a child care center and makes finding a location challenging. That was also experienced by the board tasked with finding a building for the former CASA preschool. For the new preschool, many upgrades were needed related to bathrooms, ramps, doors, flooring, countertops, exit signs, and more. Work had to be done on electrical, HVAC, and fire alarm systems. Progress is being made, as evidenced by a fresh coat of bright blue paint on the wall, a new sign out front, and the kid-sized tables that have been assembled. Children and families will have access to the classroom as well as other spaces like the meet and greet area near the entrance, the motor skills area, and a natural play area outdoors. Montessori is a familiar preschool model, but the name Prairie Rose is unique to Coinsen, who has a love of prairie grass and pollinators. She plans to integrate gardening into her lessons. The industrial park location gives the preschool access to lots of businesses, like Allison's Dance Center, she pointed out, and for the workers at all those businesses, it's convenient to drop off and pick up their children. Coinsen is hiring approximately 7 assistants and supervisors. She plans to be the only certified teacher for now, but she's already got her after-school program supervisor on board, said Lillian Hernandez, who's graduating from the University of Northern Iowa this May and helping to transform the space. "I want to help create a place where kids are comfortable and excited to come." Coinsen's aspirations have her dreaming of satellite locations and maybe even bigger plans in 5 years. Garrett Jacobson, automotive technology instructor at Hawkeye Community College, has been named the 2024 Educator of the Year by the Vision High Tech Training and Expo. He was nominated by fellow educators, former students, and automotive industry professionals. The award was presented to Jacobson on March 1st during the Educator Think Tank program at the Vision Conference. He has been an instructor in the Automotive Technology program since 2019. The Educator of the Year is awarded to an individual whose commitment to their students and program sets them apart. They have demonstrated innovative and successful teaching methods and drive to continually adapt and move forward in their teaching field. The conference is the premier professional development event for automotive service industry professionals. The Educator Think Tank program was launched with the goal of bringing automotive technology educators together in a learning-driven and exciting environment to brainstorm, collaborate, and learn. Bob Manning has always been fascinated by real estate, but he's never been the stereotypical construction worker. He was the one approving loans during his decades-long career in banking and now is the executive director of the Cedar Valley Home Builders Association, preparing to retire this spring at the age of 72. The Cedar Falls resident recalls his initial interest leading him to take the long way to places on the Iowa State University campus as a student more than 50 years ago, utilizing that extra time to stare in awe at ongoing projects, none bigger than the James Hilton Coliseum. When he was older, Manning, too, would take detours with his kids on drives to get pizza or visit Grandma's house to check in on the progress of homes his bank had financed, especially taking a liking to those on the water. His role in the wheel of real estate, as he likes to call it, was admittedly never on the side of the guys on the roofs with hammers. His last full-time job was as senior vice president at First Security State Bank, which he quips came about when his hair turned gray. "I didn't have that dexterity like my son and dad," Manning said. "It skipped my generation." The 1969 Columbus Catholic High School and 1974 Iowa State graduate had been on the board of the Cedar Valley Home Builders Association for 15 to 20 years when he announced his retirement from the bank in early 2015. That's when he was asked by the board, with his experience, including his more than 30 years in banking, to take over for the late Bruce Radue as executive officer, a role later renamed executive director of the nonprofit, with now nearly 70 members from all across the industry. He's ready to step away from the role no later than May 31st, though he notes he'll still be involved in the community in capacities such as a board member at the Cedar Falls Economic Development Corporation. Manning said the 10-member board has its sights on turning the part-time role he's contracted to fill into one with hours resembling that of a full-time position to, in part, take some load off the board and membership. During his time on the board and in the executive role, he's been advocating for home builders and those involved in the wheel. Said Manning, "The contractors are good at putting in nails. I take the pressure off them because it can be intimidating to talk to the city council." Additionally, he gets neighbors feeling more comfortable about housing projects. Manning's also helped establish new educational and networking events for members. One example is Lunch and Learn, but none may be more well-known than the annual housing conference. One highlight of the conference was when Joel Bigelow from Rochester, Minnesota, came to town for one of the first few events to talk about how his home builder business became established and successful. A big part is the networking he helps facilitate as well. Manning has helped keep the website up to date and remain a resource. He also brings about other initiatives like scholarships for students interested in construction. In part, he said, board members want the next executive director to spend even more time on the whole promotion effect and getting members up to speed on what's new technology-wise in the marketplace. The bowls have been thrown, auction items have been gathered, and the soup will soon be simmering, all in preparation for the Northeast Iowa Food Bank's annual Empty Bowls fundraiser. The long-standing tradition, which was started in the area in 2006 by the Black Hawk Labor Council, will be held from 6 to 9 p.m. Friday at the Hilton Garden Inn, 7213 Nordic Drive, Cedar Falls. The event provides attendees with a meal of soup and bread. Attendees can choose a handmade bowl that they will be able to take home with them. The bowls are made locally in the Cedar Valley, said Jared Figenbaum, the food bank's community engagement manager. They come from schools, from art classes, from individual potters who are looking for creative ways to help the community. They come in a variety of different styles, skill levels, colors, and everything in between, he said. The Hearst Center for the Arts in Cedar Falls is one of the organizations that donates bowls. The center hosts work days for people to drop in and make bowls for the event. The soup and bread are also donated from the community. Soup is supplied by Hilton Garden Inn and the Isle of Casino. And the bread is supplied by Rockets Bakery, Olive Garden, Doy Joy's, and Red Lobster. Tickets are $40 and include the meal, a drink ticket, and the chance to participate in a raffle, as well as live and silent auctions. They can be purchased online at go.neifb.org/empty bowls or by calling the food bank at 319-235-0507. The silent auction will include gift cards and merchandise from local businesses. The live auction will feature an outdoor barbecue package, a grill, a kayak, a family photo package, and a travel package for the NCAA Men's Basketball Final Four. Figenbaum says the money raised goes right back to feed the community. By feeding yourself, you're feeding others. We have seen a dramatic increase in food insecurity in the Cedar Valley. The clay bowls are a way of reminding people that there are empty bowls in our community. People need to support organizations that are feeding the community. That is the reason we do this. A Sunrise at Night party is planned Saturday to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Sunrise Children's Zoo. The event is from 7 to 11 p.m. at Electric Ball Park Ballroom, 310 West Conger, on the National Cattle Congress grounds. Lonesome Road will provide live music for dancing. There will be food, beverages, and a cash bar. A live and silent auction are planned. Items include a personalized landscape rock and a basketball signed by Caitlin Clark and other 2024 Iowa Hawkeyes women's basketball team members. Tickets are $25 per person, $400 for a table of eight, available at University Chiropractic in Waterloo or Black Hawk Memorial in Cedar Falls. Or for tickets and to donate auction items, call 319-961-4368. All proceeds benefit the zoo. The party is a major fundraiser for the beloved zoo. Founded in 1974 by the Sunrise Exchange Club, the project is part of the club's focus on preventing child abuse and strengthening families. More than 40,000 kids and families visit the zoo each season. Wyckoff attributes the zoo's longevity to free and wholesome family entertainment. The zoo provides farm experiences for city kids. You'd be surprised at the number of city kids who have never touched a pig, a goat, or a cow, so it's a pretty neat experience for them. From May to September, the zoo is home for goats, donkeys, an alpaca, a deer, chickens, ducks, a few peacocks, and of course, kittens and other critters. Farmers lend their animals for the summer. Other animals are sheltered over winter by their owners and other farmers. We have two mules that come to us each year, owned by one of our members. They love to come out for the summer because they know they're going to get a lot of carrots, Wyckoff said. The club purchases a cow, pig, and sheep that are sold at the end of the season. Kittens also can be adopted. Zoo admission is free, and children can purchase handfuls of feed to offer animals. The zoo opens on Memorial Day and closes after the National Cattle Congress Fair in September. Day-to-day operations are run by regular staff with assistance from interns from Hawkeye Community College's agriculture program and a host of club members and other volunteers. It's the value we find in our exchange club memberships, and we know kids love the zoo. We're on our third generation of kids coming up, said Wyckoff. Sunrise Exchange Club welcomes new members. Meetings are from 7 to 8 a.m. Tuesdays at Perkins Restaurants, 4045 Hammond Avenue. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Charles Schmidt, 77, of Waterloo, passed away on Saturday, March 2nd, at his home, surrounded by family and friends, under hospice care after a long hospital battle. Gerald was born in Caledonia, Minnesota, on October 28, 1946. His family then moved to Rushford, Minnesota, in 1958, where he lived until he was drafted. He was drafted into the U.S. Army and was a veteran of the Vietnam War. After returning home, he moved to Waterloo and joined the Waterloo Fire Department, where he worked for 33 years, February of 69 through October of 01. The first several years, he was an EMT driver on the ambulance and then switched over as a firefighter driver. In 2008, he moved to Kansas City, Missouri, and then moved back to Waterloo in 2016. Fire Department honors will be provided by the Waterloo Fire Department and will take place at 11:30 a.m., followed by a time of sharing on Saturday, March 23rd, at Locke at Tower Park, 4140 Kimball Avenue, Waterloo. Family will receive friends 1 hour prior. Interment will take place in Preston, Minnesota in summer 2024 with military honors. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation in Gerald's name to Cedar Bend Humane Society, Cedar Valley Honor Flight, Cedar Valley Youth Sports Association, or the Waterloo Fire Safety and Outreach. Pamela Jean McNamee, 71, of Ackley, formerly of Shell Rock, passed away on Wednesday morning, March 13th, after a difficult battle with cancer. Pam was born on May 30th, 1952. In 1970, Pam graduated from Waverly Shell Rock High School in Waverly. Pam married Charles McNamee in 71. The couple later divorced. Pam had a love for bowling and pool. She was an EMT on the Shell Rock Ambulance Service for many years and was proud of her service to the community. Pam's body has been cremated and a celebration of life will be held at a later date. David Owen, 70, passed away March 9th at the Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha, Iowa. Born in Waterloo, he was a 1971 graduate of West High School. In 1974, he married Terry Miller. No funeral is planned, though a celebration of life will be held at a future date. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Worldwide Work of Jehovah's Witnesses. Terry Lynn Menon, age 73, of Parkersburg, died Friday, March 15th. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 22nd at the Bethel Lutheran Church in Parkersburg. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 21st at the Redmond Funeral Home in Parkersburg. Robert Charles Hogan died on March 14th in Cedar Falls of natural causes. He was born in Jessup on April 16th, 1939. He married Mary Roerig on December 26, 1964, in Dubuque, Iowa. He graduated from Loras College in 61 with a BA in economics. He served in the U.S. Army in 1962 and 1963. Soon after, Robert began his career at John Deere, Dubuque, as a marketing representative. He retired in 1999 from John Deere, Waterloo, as a product support manager. A celebration of life will take place with family and close friends in April. Memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice. Anna Mae Armstrong, 92, of Cedar Falls, died Friday, March 15th at her home. She was born July 19th, 1931, in St. Kilian, Minnesota. She married James Jim Armstrong on September 19th, 1953, in St. Kilian, Minnesota. Anna was the office manager in the Educational Media Center at the University of Northern Iowa until her retirement. After her retirement, she worked at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church as the office manager. Mass of Christian Burial will be 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 22nd, at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church, with burial at Mount Olivet Cemetery. Public visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 21st, at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on South Street, where there will be a 4 p.m. Catholic Daughters of the Americas Rosary and 6:30 p.m. vigil service. Visitation also 1 hour prior to the Mass on Friday at the church. The Mass will be live streamed. Memorials may be directed to Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church. Marilyn Joyce Mary Piper, formerly of Cedar Falls, died Thursday, March 14th of natural causes at Bishop Drum Retirement Center in Johnston. She was born on January 13th, 1930, in Plainfield. The family moved to Cedar Falls in 1944, and Marilyn graduated from Cedar Falls High School in 1947. She was united in marriage to Gerald Lloyd Piper on April 16, 1950, at the Little Brown Church in the Vale in Nashua. She retired from Viking Pump Company, the IDEX Corporation, in 1992 after 25 years of service in the main office. She moved to Johnston, Iowa in 2010, residing at Bishop Drum Retirement Center in Johnston since 2015. Funeral services will be 2 p.m. Thursday, March 21st, at Richardson Funeral Service in Cedar Falls. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, March 20th, at Richardson Funeral Service, and 1 hour prior to the service on Thursday. Interment at Hillside Cemetery in Cedar Falls. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be directed to the family or to the March of Dimes. Clifford Trent, 89. Clifford entered into the arms of Jesus on March 14th after a short battle with leukemia. An open house celebration will be held at Dahl Funeral Home on Thursday, March 21st from 4 to 8 p.m. with a prayer service at 6:30 p.m. Carla Cousins, 66, of Elk Run Heights, passed away March 13th after a hard-fought battle with ALS. Carla was born on 6/18/1957. She enjoyed fishing and spending time at her summer home in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. She worked hard her entire life and was proud of her professional accomplishments, her last role being a purchasing manager at Iowa Premium in Tama. A celebration of life will be held at Hoochie's in Evansdale at 4 p.m. on April 12th. Carla will be laid to rest in the Elgin Cemetery during a private service. Gladys Mae Young, 85, of Waterloo, passed away at New Aldea Lifescapes on Friday, March 15th. She was born April 30th, 1938, in northern Minnesota. She was a seamstress at KG Men's Store and Van Mauer, in addition to decorating cakes at Hy-Vee. Her funeral will be at 11:30, Friday, March 22nd, at Walnut Ridge Baptist Church of Waterloo, with an hour of visitation prior. Richard Braun, 78, of Waterloo, passed away Friday, March 15th, at Cedar Valley Hospice Home. Dick was born November 16th, 1945, in Waterloo. He married Linda Christensen, and the two were later divorced. Dick graduated from Columbus High School in 1964 and attended Dunwoodie College of Technology in Minneapolis, Minnesota. From 1967 until his retirement in 2008, he was a tool and die maker. Dick was a big Cubs fan. There will be a private graveside service at Mount Olivet Cemetery in Waterloo at a later date. Memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice Home. Kathleen Katie Brennan, 38, died March 13th. A memorial gathering will be held March 23rd from 1 to 3 p.m. at Isles Dunn's Chapel in Des Moines. Carolyn Leah Schmidt, 74, of Grundy Center, died of cancer after a difficult four-year struggle at Creekside Living in Grundy Center on Friday, March 15th. Mark William Mangan, 67, of Clinton, formerly of Waterloo, passed away Wednesday, March, at Eagle Point Nursing and Rehab Center in Clinton. And that does it for today's obituaries. 3 years ago, Steve Hansen felt he'd been hit below the belt when he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. The degenerative disorder causes deterioration of balance, speech, motor skills, and sensory function. Probably the first symptom was when my wife noticed my voice was getting softer. My walk got a little unsteady, my gait was different, and my balance was off. I was putting pressure on my toes when I walked, said Hansen, who retired from John Deere after 48 years. But he wasn't down for the count. He came out swinging. Hansen is boxing at the Cedar Valley Boxing Club in downtown Waterloo. Several times a week for the last 2.5 years, he carefully climbs the stairs to the second floor gym. He joins a small cadre of other people with Parkinson's disease who work out for an hour under the watchful eye of trainer Steve Rice. Exercise can be beneficial for managing Parkinson's, reducing tremors, stiffness, and pain, and improving motor skills, balance, and soft voice syndrome, according to the Parkinson's Foundation. Studies have shown boxing therapy might slow disease progression. Boxers, like Hansen, pummel the speed bag and punch the heavy bag, along with working out with medicine balls and kettle weights, and participating in stretching, resistance, balance, and agility exercises. The boxers don't lay a glove on each other. We've had more Parkinson's boxers, but we're down to about 4 people now, said Rice, who has been training professional and amateur boxers for 30 years. However, he has fielded numerous phone calls from people with Parkinson's who are interested in boxing. Those steep stairs are an obstacle. A chairlift would make the gym more accessible. Thanks to Kevin Dill, the lift could soon become a reality. Proceeds from the 3rd annual Kevin Dill Golf Tournament will benefit Parkinson's as well as dementia-friendly services and programs serving veterans. The event is June 8th at Gates Golf Course. Cost is $400 per team and 4-person best shot. There will be a shotgun start at 7:30 a.m. Fat Cup Coffee will be on site in the morning, and Blue Barn Barbecue will provide lunch for golfers. Dill, retired director of Blackhawk County Veterans Affairs, was diagnosed almost 6 years ago with Lewy body dementia, one of the most common causes of dementia, according to the National Institute of Aging. More than 1 million Americans are affected by the progressive disease. Symptoms include memory loss, confusion, tremors, difficulty walking, paranoia, and hallucinations. Dill and his wife Tammy have raised thousands of dollars for the Lewy Body Dementia Association, Dementia Friendly Iowa, and numerous veterans organizations. Dill is involved with Dementia Friendly Cedar Valley, an organization he worked to establish in conjunction with the Northeast Iowa Area Agency on Aging. The Dills have worked in concert with such organizations as the Rotary Club of the Cedar Valley, the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association 39-6, and others. Several years ago, the Dills established the Kevin Dill Family Fund through the Waterloo Community Foundation. Contributions and funds raised at the golf tournament will be administered through the fund. Dill likens the mission of helping others to the Good Samaritan parable from the Bible's Gospel of Luke. A traveler is beaten and left half dead alongside the road. Passers-by avoid the traveler rather than stop to help. Dill draws a parallel between that person laying on the path to veterans and people with dementia and Parkinson's. Some people avert their eyes and pass on by. Fortunately, Dill said, there are good Samaritans in the community who are willing to lift up people in need of services, care, and aid. One such Samaritan is Tim Coombs, Executive Director of Americans for Independent Living, an organization that advocates for disabled veterans and raises awareness of the need for transitional housing for veterans who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. Dill reached out to Coombs, who has agreed to install the chairlift at the boxing gym. Rice is another Samaritan. The trainer was contacted several years ago by Terry Herkes about Rock Steady Boxing, a program designed for people with Parkinson's. I knew Muhammad Ali had had Parkinson's, but I was unfamiliar with the program. The idea caught my interest, and I did some research on it. We went from there, Rice explained. Herkes was diagnosed with Parkinson's 16 years ago, the day of the Parkersburg tornado, she said. Boxing intrigued her because it's good for balance and movement. I also like the camaraderie of being involved. This is a valuable resource for us. Hansen, too, appreciates a place to go where he can talk with other people who have the same disease. I've made some good friends here. Scientific research supports boxing therapy benefits, including building confidence and stamina. Todd Meyerhoff of Waterloo was 46 when he was diagnosed with early-onset Parkinson's disease 14 years ago. In 2015, Meyerhoff underwent surgery to implant a deep brain stimulator. Electrical leads were inserted into parts of the brain affected by Parkinson's and connected to a battery pack implemented in his chest to control tremors and other symptoms. It's helped, but life continues to be challenging for Meyerhoff. He's interested in boxing for exercise. I haven't started yet, but exercise is key with Parkinson's, said Meyerhoff, who is advocating for a better organized source of education, resources, and support for the Parkinson's community. Several other organizations stand to benefit from a successful golf tournament in June, including Americans for Independent Living and Cedar Valley Honor Flights. Anyone interested in registering for the golf tournament can sign up at golf.campaignpilot.com. Donations can be made online at kevindillgolf.wlucommunityfoundation.org, or checks for the Kevin Dill Family Fund can be sent to Waterloo Community Fund. And in some college wrestling news, Masama Andean was emphatic in his response. And Dean built a big lead and then held on for a 12-4 victory over Gabriel Zirdan of Concordia Moorhead to win the 197-pound national title Saturday at the NCAA Division III Wrestling Championships at the La Crosse Center. The victory was his fourth bonus victory of the tournament and made him Wartburg's eighth two-time national champion. And Dean's was the biggest highlight of Wartburg's Saturday. There was plenty of elation, heartache, and disappointment. Wartburg had a shot at its 16th national title, but fell short as rival Augsburg University with two national champions, one with 95 points, earning its second straight and 15th overall crown. The Knights were second with 87.5, and Wisconsin La Crosse finished with 82.5. Wartburg's other finalist, Zane Mulder, also looking to repeat as national champion, lost in the 174 finals to Jared Stricker of Wisconsin-Eau Claire 10-3. Wartburg finished with five All-Americans as Joe Pins at 133 came in third, Kyler Romero at 141 came in fifth, and Charlie Dogen at 149 came in third, also reached the podium. It was one of the most exciting and interesting team races in over the last three decades. Three teams had a shot at winning the team title. Augsburg led by three over both Wartburg and UWL after the consolation finals, 85.5 to 82.5. But the Eagles were in the driver's seat with four finalists, two more than both the Aggies and Knights, seeking to be the first program since 1994, Ithaca College. But La Crosse only saw Nolan Hurdle repeat as champion at 157 with a 4-2 win over Peter Kane of Williams. The lead changed multiple times between teams during the third session Saturday morning. La Crosse led through the semifinals, but Wartburg quickly surged past them in the medal matches. Mulder avenged a loss to Loras College's Zeb Nida from the regional finals with a dominating 7-0 win in the semifinals. And Dean scored early and often before holding on for a 9-4 win over Westminster's Montgomery Mills in the semis. Wartburg had a perfect medal round. After going 0-6 in four seasons against North Central's Robbie Preckin, Joe Pins pinned Preckin in 3 minutes and 27 seconds to take third at 133. Pins rallied after dropping a 9-6 semifinal decision to Baldwin Wallace's Jaden Hinton. Romero then rallied from a 7-0 first period deficit, fighting off his back to beat Johnson and Wales' Victor Perlisci 12-11 for fifth at 141. Dogen shook off a 4-1 sudden victory loss to Tyler Gebel of La Crosse in the semifinals to win first in the consolation semifinals before beating Eric Kincaid of Loras 7-2 for third at 149. The three wins pushed Wartburg past La Crosse for the team lead before Augsburg got pins from Seth Grotzinger at 174 and Parker Lenz at 197 in seventh place matches that produced four bonus points and gave the Aggies the lead heading into the finals and setting the stage for the suspenseful finals. If you're looking for something to do, Black Hawk County's chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness will present Dealing with Burnout and the Brain. It will be presented by Emily Conrad Steffen and Rachel Jorgensen. They are licensed social workers and therapists at the State Street Counseling Services. The program will be from 7 to 8 p.m. on Thursday in the lower level of the First Congregational Church in Waterloo, 608 West 4th Street. For more information, call 319-830-6448. And at the Waterloo Public Library, they will hold a tech class, Apple Device Help, from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Friday in the conference room. The question and answer style session is for adults who have specific questions about their Apple iPhone or other devices. Registration is required. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, the first day of spring. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Ready.
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing, it really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.